Off the Ball, GAA.
The talent in that team and the levels that they can get to, like, we haven't seen it yet. There's so much more in them. Not to make it any worse for you, but you ain't seen nothing yet.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball Breakfast
with UPMC Sports Surgery Clinic. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
But for now, we're turning our attention specifically to Liverpool and maybe a bit of Everton as well. Delighted to say Paul Joyce, the Times Northern Football Correspondent, is with us this morning. Paul, good morning to you. How are you?
Oh, good, thank you. Thanks for having me back on, especially after me saying everything was all right with Liverpool last week, and then we see a few frailties in the performance yesterday. So, yeah, I appreciate the chance to come back on.
Oh, well, we're delighted to have you. The internet went mad to actually see your face, it turns out, because you don't use your face as your avatar on Twitter. They're like, whoa, hang on a second, that's not him.
Yeah, no, listen, if I'd known I had to come on the camera, I probably would have said no, but yeah, it's modern journalism now, isn't it? You've got to promote yourself a bit more, so yeah, we'll see.
Well, we're delighted.
It might be a farewell appearance.
Oh no, hopefully not. We're delighted you did it for us. So talk to us a little bit about some of those frailties, because afterwards the manager was in particular concerned about the goals they're conceding. It is still pre-season, really, when it comes down to it. So maybe the added impetus of there being 3 points on the line the next time the team plays just tunes them in that little bit more.
Yeah, I think that's obviously the case. I think that the thing that would have disappointed Slot is that he raised this issue before the game with the players. He'd said at this press conference on Friday that they needed to stop giving up so many chances to the opponents. That's been recurring sort of problem during pre-season. Yeah, and I think he would have just been disappointed with the manner in which Liverpool sort of let Palace back into the game twice. You could see some of this sort of attacking thrust that they'll have this season with Ekotike and Wirtz and people like the players like that. But the balance of the team didn't really seem right with Gravenberch not in there. They were a bit too open. I don't think it helped that Van Dijk had been ill for a lot of last week and missed some of the training. He missed the final pre-season friendly workout at Anfield last Monday. So there are mitigating factors. And yeah, as you said, you know, Anfield under the lights on Friday, start of the title defence proper against a Bournemouth team that have lost a lot of players but are still potent from attacking sense themselves will be a good challenge.
Can I ask you a little bit to expand on that balance of the team issue? Because on paper, it looks like fantasy football, you know, and if they were to complete the signing of Isak, then wow, what a group of players they have. But when you actually list out the team, you start to go, well, there's somebody either missing in midfield or there's somebody missing up front. So what in a big game do you think will actually be the... Let's assume everybody's fit and they don't sign Isak just yet. What is the starting, certainly from midfield forward?
Well, I think it's a, you know, yesterday was an indication of that. I mean, Gravenberch would normally come into the team. He obviously was missing yesterday because he'd just become a father, and he'll be suspended on Friday as well. He was sent off in the final game of last season against Crystal Palace. I think... It's as much a sort of mindset issue as a personnel issue. So it's everybody chasing back together. It's everybody working hard. At the start of last season, Slot showed the team some stats that said that in the final season or the season that preceded him, so that would have been 23-24, that they weren't running back as much as they had been in previous seasons. He actually showed them videos of Manchester City and Foden and Savinho and their work rate off the ball. So it's something he's very big on, and I think that's something that he will be sort of hammering home this week, that it's not a case of we've got all these attacking players, and it's left to the defence to do this. It's a team collective, and the balance just looked a little bit off yesterday. I think they've looked tired in the last two games in the second halves, the Atletico game and also yesterday against Palace. That could just be down to, you know, where we are in terms of building up to the new season. But I think he will be reinforcing that point a little bit like he did last 12 months ago, that, you know, it's everyone in this. It's not just left to the defence and, you know, the two midfielders to sort of screen the team.
Paul, they've been linked with Mark Gay at the moment from Crystal Palace as well as a potential move before September. Is there a chance they dip in the market for a centre-back, you know, particularly with Kwanzaa having left the club as well? Maybe they're a little bit light in that position for a cover now.
Yeah, I think so. I think that will be, there'll be a lot of sort of focus on that over the next sort of 3 weeks. There's a 18-year-old centre-back at Parma, Giovanni Leone, who they like as well. They've been trying to sign a young centre-back for a number of years now, primarily because when Van Dijk is fit, he never ever misses a game. So it's difficult to maybe sign his replacement now, who goes, because he always plays. So Leone was managed by Christian Chivu last season at Parma. Chivu has just moved to Inter Milan as manager, and Inter are also keen on him. And I think Liverpool think the competition, because of that link and because he's probably more likely to play in Serie A straight away, that Chivu's presence at Inter complicates it. Whether Inter have the money to do that now remains to be seen. I think Liverpool will look at that in the first part of this week. But the Gueye deal, yeah, I mean, Steve Parish said after the Community Shield yesterday, he was asked, if the price is right, will you sell? And he said, yes, we will sell, because Crystal Palace to lose a player on a free next summer of Mark Gueye's calibre is a big problem for them. They turned down a £70 million bid from Tottenham in January. But the key was in the question, because of course he will sell at the right price, but what is that right price for Crystal Palace? And what is that right price for Liverpool? I would say there's a huge discrepancy on those. I think Liverpool would be looking to pay, 30, bit more than 30 for somebody with 12 months left on his contract. But to go back to your point, I think they do need to get a centre-back in. You've got a situation with Konate, who's entered into the final 12 months of his deal. And obviously he's been linked with Real Madrid quite a bit. And obviously Liverpool have been stung in the recent past with Real Madrid coming in and taking Liverpool's players for less than what they would see as their own market value. So I think they will look to add depth. When they won the title in 2020 under Klopp, under Jurgen Klopp, I think it was Dejan Lovren left that summer, and they basically left themselves with Van Dijk, Gomez and Joel Matip as recognised centre-backs, and then there was the injuries to all three, which meant in the second half of the season they were using Jordan Henderson there, and then Liverpool eventually settled on Nat Phillips and Nat Williams. And for them to salvage Champions League qualification that season, 2021, with such a sort of untried partnership as Williams and Phillips, was some achievement. So I think history tells them that they can't leave themselves short in that area.
The Konate situation is interesting, because it feels a little bit like, it's different from Trent, where they were a little bit uncertain themselves about whether or not he was going to be the long-term successor there. And then obviously the injury problems cleared up and it's like, oh, he's actually very good. Maybe we should have given him a big deal 2 years ago and taken the risk.
Well, I think the first sort of intention that they wanted to extend him was probably about 11 months ago now. So no, just over. It was sort of just after the transfer window had closed last year. So there was sort of contact then. I think it's just... these negotiations these days are just so complicated. I think Konaté will look at himself and I think he's actually had a bit of an up and down 2025 so far. I think he started the season very well, but then there were a few games where he was a little bit flaky is the right word, but he wasn't as imposing as he had been in the second half of last season as he had in the first. But he's a key player. When he's on it, he's a key player for Liverpool. The fans really like him. Listen, invariably it's going to come down to terms, and if Real Madrid are in the background, which all the noise suggests that they are, then, you know, the longer that goes on, the more sort of trouble in that situation will be for Liverpool, because just going back to the point we were speaking about before, they have tried to sign young centre-halves in each of the three last years. The last 3 years, they've tried to sign young centre-halves. So they originally went for Levi Colwell at Chelsea, but they couldn't get him out because he had a pathway there and Chelsea probably wouldn't have sold to Liverpool anyway. In 2024, they went for Lenny Yoro. But he was at Lille and then went to Manchester United again because he saw a better pathway because he wanted to play regular football straight away. Liverpool couldn't offer him that with Van Dijk and Konaté as their main two. And in this summer, they wanted Dean Huijsen from Bournemouth, like every other sort of top club in England. Everybody was looking at him. But he obviously chose to go to Real Madrid. So it has been a bit of a problem. And what Liverpool don't do is just buy somebody for the sake of filling a hole. So while I think we're right in saying that it's an area where they will look at, if the price isn't right for them, I think that's a really interesting question on what they do, because the way that they've run the club and the way that they've built the club up to be so successful is that they will ignore the noise that is often within the sort of fan base and around the club. We've got to sign this player, we need this player. And they'll back themselves to make strategic, intelligent decisions. So if Steve Parrish is asking for $50 million for Mark Guehi, and if you're Crystal Palace, you would ask a lot of money because he's vital to how you play and what you are achieving. Then I think that's going to be really interesting to see how that plays out over the coming weeks, because Liverpool has shown a tendency not just to go to option B, C, D, E because they want the person who they think can be the long-term answer or a long-term answer.
Do Liverpool have a limit in mind when it comes to Isak then, given that, you know, Eddie Howe seems increasingly resigned that this is going to end with a transfer and him leaving Newcastle this month? Liverpool seem to hold all the cards when it comes to the negotiating on this, but is there a hard limit for them, say, above this 110 first bid that went in?
I think so, personally. I mean, it's quite difficult to get information out on Isak. I mean, the figure of 150 that has been mentioned from the Newcastle end, I don't think Liverpool will pay 150 for Isak. I don't think they pay 130 is my personal view, but listen, with add-ons and stuff like that, possibly. I think the way the story came out was that Liverpool had contacted Newcastle and said that they were interested in signing Isak and would go to 120 million. That was David Ornstein from The Athletic who first reported that. I think it was about 3 weeks ago today, actually, now. And then Liverpool put the bid in of 110 million, and you're thinking, well, if you've sort of intimated that you're paid 120, why would you put put a bid in for 110, that's obvious that it's going to get rejected. It doesn't give Newcastle something to think about, really. But maybe that was the top line figure that Liverpool were prepared to go to. I don't see them spending 150 on Alexander Isak this summer. I just don't think they would go that high for any player, to be honest. They were quite firm in the Florian Wirtz negotiations when Dortmund were asking for 150 million euros. And I know there's a difference here. But they were quite adamant that the bid of 100 million guaranteed got them to the negotiating table. And from there, we'll discuss the add-ons. But they made clear that they weren't going to go to 150 million euros in that case, which I think was about 135 million pounds. So I think they will be firm on the Isak thing. I'm still really intrigued about Newcastle's sort of stance in all of this, because I know the player is kicking up and not acting well, but the more this goes on, for me, the risk of reintegrating Isak has got to be less for Newcastle than spending 70 million on somebody who was their sixth or seventh choice originally. And that's what we're into now, because they went for Delap, they went for João Pedro, they went for Cunha and Mbeumo to maybe lesser degrees. They went for Sesko. They obviously went for Ekitike. So if you're the big problem Newcastle have got is that they've not got a sporting director in place at the moment. And the hierarchy seems, on the one hand, there's messaging from the hierarchy seems to be, we're not going to sell. And then on the other hand, you have Eddie Howe doing his press conferences, sort of intimating, reading between the lines, that he would be prepared to let him go. So there seems to be, from a distance, it feels like not everybody is on the same page at Newcastle on what the next step will be. I just think that the further you go down these options for strikers, the more risk that there is that the person that you're bringing in will be a success. And let's be honest, you're already up against it, because Isak scored so many goals for Newcastle the last two seasons that you're really needing a blue chip player in the first place anyway.
Yeah, it is a fascinating kind of scenario unfolding, where it was supposed to be a summer of enjoyment for the Newcastle fans. You know, you've won a trophy, you've qualified for the Champions League. It's a big moment. As a seasoned watcher of these sagas, what do you think is actually going to happen? Will Isak join Liverpool by the start of September?
I covered the Coutinho situation in 2017 when Barcelona first came. And Klopp used to have a saying whereby, regardless of the length of your contract, we've all got a one-year agreement here. So we give everything each season for 1 year. And then if you want to come and leave, you come and tell us early enough in the transfer window, early enough after the season has ended, so we can get all our ducks in a row and we can help you move on. Now, the Coutinho Barcelona thing blew up in sort of late July, early August, and Liverpool were just adamant, no, it's too late in the transfer window for us. And Barcelona were pushing and bids over 100 million, and they didn't fold. And I think that, and obviously, they then sold him 6 months later in the January. And Coutinho had a back injury at the start of, as the start of the season continued, and but he was reintegrated. But that's Liverpool, and they were very strong characters in terms of Michael Edwards and Mike Gordon, president of Fenway Sports Group. So they were prepared to back themselves and say no to the player. People talk about player power and Isak will get his way. I still think the fee could be an issue, and I still think the fact that Newcastle don't seem to be close to the fact that Newcastle have to get in one, maybe two strikers, they're the impediments to the deal actually taking place. One is the fee, and two, Newcastle being able to replace it. So we've probably got another couple of weeks of maybe this dragging on. And then there's Liverpool play Newcastle at St. James's Park on August the 25th. So,
ooh, tasty.
exactly, yeah. That'd be one to watch.
And if he was to play in the team, if he does sign for Liverpool, what's the team then?
Well, this is the thing, isn't it? I mean, I did think, sort of when Ekitike went off yesterday, Liverpool sort of ended it with a sort of midfield of Endo and McAllister sitting deep, Wirtz and Szoboszlai a bit higher, so it was like a box. And then you had Salah and Gapko as sort of two attacking prongs, but they were quite wide from each other. It was almost like split. And I did think Liverpool lacked a bit of a focal point. So going back to the start of the chat, I mean, I can see why Slot wants somebody else to come in to give them a focal point, because from this squad, you could still have Chiesa leaving. You could still have Harvey Elliott leaving. And that's on top of Diaz going, Nunes going, and obviously the sort of loss of Diego Jota as well. So I can see from the manager's perspective, even though it looks like he has all these options, I can see why he wants somebody else to come in. And then it's up to him to come up with the formula. I think we'll see him rotate more this season. He didn't really rotate massively last season, because I think he thinks that if he can get the balance right, Liverpool can go far in the Champions League as well. So, I think where they're all going to fit in, you know, let's wait for another day to see if they get that striker between now and September the 1st.
Before you came on, we were talking about the supercomputer that had run the odds. I'd simulated the season a million times, only 100, I think. Liverpool are favourites to win. Given the transfer activity that we've seen and what's to come, and the fact they're building off such a high base, are Liverpool the outstanding team in the Premier League and therefore the favourites at the moment? Or have other teams quietly caught up to them? What's your assessment?
Well, I think we asked Slot this on Friday at his press conference, and he embraced the favouritism. But it wasn't because of the spending, because his point was, and listen, I think it's a valid point. You know, the players, he's lost basically from last season's squad players who made 150 Premier League appearances last season between them. So Trent Alexander-Arnold, Kelleher played 10 Premier League games because of Alisson's fitness issues. Kwanzaa, Jota, Nunes, Diaz. I think that's it, yeah. Six players. So there was a need for Liverpool to spend. So Slot's argument has been that don't just look at the spending in isolation, because we've actually brought in about £200 million in transfer fees with all the add-ons included. His sort of point on the whole favouritism thing was, we're favourites because we played really well last season, and the team that usually wins the title is favourites again. I think he will expect sort of a renewed challenge from City. It's interesting that one of the stories this morning is that Tottenham are negotiating for Savinho, the winger, for £50 million, which is sort of a bit of one of those transfer stories that's come out of the blue. Obviously, he's only been there a year. And, you know, Guardiola seemed to sort of talk highly of him last season, so that's a little bit of a surprise. And with Grealish probably likely to move on from the other side. You wonder if City are going to go back into the market and sign somebody. It wouldn't be like them to let two sort of wingers go, sort of elements of the team that are so important to Guardiola and how he plays. I think the concern for City will be Rodri, because obviously he's now injured again and missing till maybe late September. Arsenal will be stronger if Saka stays fit. I think the evolution of Chelsea is really interesting. I think Maresca has done a really impressive job there. Whether the Club World Cup catches up with them, I think that's a valid question. I mean, the scheduling for those players has been, you know, relentless and to a ridiculous degree, to be honest. So that would be one question mark against Chelsea. But I think as much as a sort of strategy seems to have been just by anyone and everyone, I think you start to see that bear fruit now with the trophies that they're starting to win. And I think that will create a confidence within Chelsea squad that they can kick on this season. The loss of Colwell to injury is a big blow. And I think Maresca said that he wants to try and get a defender in, which again will be interesting because there's only so many...
Well, Mark Guehi, suddenly the value of that has increased, right?
Well, exactly. It will be for Steve Parrish. I think because of the way Guehi was sort of treated at Chelsea previously, I think he won't be that massively keen to go back. But certainly Steve Parrish would be open. That would create a bit of an auction. I think there was talk of Newcastle trying to get him a week ago, but obviously they've moved on to Thiago with AC Milan. So, yeah, I think Liverpool will be favourites. They need to sort out, they need to fix the glitches that we saw yesterday. But I think it will be a competitive league this season, and, you know, we can probably cast a proper judgment on September the 1st when we've seen how the makeup of the squads ends. You know, how everybody is at the end of the window.
I've one last question for you. You mentioned Grealish there. Is the Grealish to is it Everton or bust essentially at this stage? Is anybody else in for him? And do you think that's going to happen?
I've heard that he has got other options. I mean, Napoli were quite strong on him earlier in the summer. I think the biggest issue will be City want to recoup as much of his wage as possible, which is about £15 million. I think Everton's initial sort of discussions on that haven't dissuaded them from pursuing the move. I went to their pre-season friendly on Saturday against AS Roma, which they lost 1-0. And they need somebody who can create a bit of excitement in the team. I think the signings that they've made so far have been, I'm not sure that they'll help the mood progress to the next level straight away. I think there'll be a bit of up and down in Everton's start to the season. But Grealish would certainly sort of be an attractive signing for them.
What's the stadium like?
Stadium's very impressive, very impressive. If you get the chance to go, you should go. It's been beautifully designed and it fits right on Liverpool's waterfront. It's right on the side of the Mersey, and it's very, very impressive from the outside, architecturally superb. But when you get inside, it's a football stadium as well. The stands are very steep. They were deliberately designed that way. It's basically the steepest that you can get a stand, and that was to sort of try and recreate the atmosphere, to help try and recreate the atmosphere at Goodison, which was on night games against the big teams, was a bear pit and nobody liked going there. And Everton need to try and recreate that, and as much as the stadium is fantastic and will unlock revenues moving forward in the next sort of 3 years, the key is going to be a team that the fans can really get behind. And I think there's a bit of work to do still to before they're ready for the start of the season.
I have one last question on behalf of the internet, because people have been wondering this summer, and now you say this could be a farewell on camera, so I may as well let you address it. People are claiming you might be Indy Kallia on Twitter at this stage. Is that true or not?
No comments on that one. No comments. you'll have Indy Kallia on here. He's won the transfer window, hasn't he, according to a lot of people.
He's certainly become more reliable, or a claim that it's now five people becoming more reliable.
Yeah, it's been an interesting summer because the transfer window is such like big business, and in terms of the social media following and the thirst for information is there every minute of every day, and that it doesn't feel like that's going to change. So there's a lot of people do a lot of good work, and I'm sure they'll be busy for the next couple of weeks as well. There'll be a few more tales to and exclusives to break.
Well, I hope this isn't the end, Paul, because we really enjoyed that. Thanks so much for making the time for us.
Yeah, no problem.
Take care. That's Paul Joyce there, the Times Northern football correspondent.
I like the way he's left that. It's just a possibility. It might actually be him.
At 8:50 this morning. So Phyllis is in the background there.
So the account has obviously changed hands. Once upon a time, this was an account that was almost primarily parody, where people probably remember about 10 years ago particularly, it used to just put bizarre rumours out there. And their hit rate on the Indy Kallia account has been really hot this summer. So they had the Florian Wirtz story before pretty much anyone else.
So, sorry, it changed hands.
It seems so.
100% changed hands or didn't?
They're claiming there's five journalists now who are running the account, and they're claiming that they have legit information on quite a few of the transfers. So they
used to just be someone in the bedroom.
Yeah, by the looks of it. But again, it had a huge following because it's primarily a parody. And it seems that someone else has now taken over the account. And obviously, Paul is one of the people who are being accused of being the Indy Kallia account. I think he's been very clever by saying no comment. I don't think it's actually him, but definitely on the internet over the last while there's been that claim. But it's while Ornstein and Fabrizio Romano became, the jewel kings of the transfer window, this time round, Indy Kallia has had detail, even Isak, saying that he wanted to move and the fact that he was basically going on strike. They had that before anyone else.
The one counter to it being somebody like Paul or other journalists would be, surely they would want the clout themselves.
Of course, and your employer would want the clout as well, no matter where you're working. If you have someone who can break transfer stories before anyone else, unless, imagine how much traffic that gives you.
Unless you're setting up some kind of a breakaway and this is like the new Athletic is happening online, you set up a podcast, I can see, join the dots, people.